You won't believe who the latest headline has to do with.
Oh no, not again.
Yep, yet another act of ignorance we have to cover, and it can only be one person that I'm talking about.
Novak Djokovic.
Hello everyone and welcome to Hold On To Your Racket, the podcast for Gen Z tennis fans. We're your hosts, Shravya.
And Josefina.
Josefina and I are so excited to be creating this podcast and sharing our love for tennis with you all.
Shravya and I are two high school gals and tennis fanatics united together by our on-the-court and off-the-court companionship.
And we're the female Gen Z voices in modern-day tennis you've been looking for, so we hope you enjoy this episode and stay tuned for more.
So, we're back with another episode of Hold On To Your Racket, and today we're going to be covering a wide range of tennis. However, unfortunately, it seems to be majority ATP for some reason, and that's the trend we've been getting these past few weeks, and I don't know how we feel about it. Definitely not great.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that later, too, because it's a stark contrast.
Yeah, so I mean, we haven't done an episode since before Valentine's Day, so happy Valentine's Day, even though it's like February 20th. But, yeah, you know, just in the spirit of the month of love, yay! Well, this next thing is not really in accordance with that theme, so take it away.
Right, so as we hinted at with our little intro, Novak Djokovic has unleashed another tirade of his latest stupidity. So, I mean, when both of us first saw the news about this, it was pretty early in the morning for both of us, because I think the BBC article, his interview, came out probably, like, for Europe time in their morning. So we were kind of, like, just woken up and, like, we're getting ready for school. And then I opened up Twitter on my phone and I saw it and I was like, you have got to be kidding me. And like when we saw like the pull quotes and all that, we were like really kind of like, this has to be made up, right? But it's not. So as you might know, we've covered this issue so many times, but last month, seems like it was a lot longer ago than just a month, but Novak Djokovic, the world number one, was deported from Australia due to his vaccination status or lack thereof. It was kind of this whole court case, like a whole thing with a loophole. He was let in and then people were like no, and then outrage bursted out, and eventually the Australian government decided that his presence in the country would just incite anti-vax sentiment, so they kicked him out. But it was controversial nonetheless. And him not being there actually had a huge impact on his career and like kind of what he was going for this year, but like it really did shake things up just in the pure sports side of things too, aside from all the politics and vaccine stance as well.
Yeah, so as you might have realized by now, he missed out on the big number 21, because we know that Roger, Rafa, and Novak were all tied at 20 before this year's Australian Open, but then Rafa was able to take it instead, so now he is that at that like one step above the other three. And you know, you would think that this might change his views on getting vaccinated, if anything, because that's the main thing we were thinking about. If you think about you know, how Rafa won and kind of during the final, what was Djokovic thinking? It must have been like, oh, see, it's worth it to get vaccinated, just bare minimum here. But obviously,
like, it would be sad if it had to come to that to convince him, but we were like, okay, maybe that will convince him
at least. However, in this BBC interview, he said in response to sacrificing titles and even his possible reputation as GOAT, he said, quote, yes, that is the price I'm willing to pay. And he said he's willing to sacrifice titles, quote, because the principles of decision making on my body are more important than any title or anything else. I'm trying to be in tune with my body as much as I possibly can. Okay, man. I just don't understand, because every time somebody asks him about whether he's anti-vax, he goes, I'm not anti-vax. I'm not part of that movement. I'm about making your own individual choices. And then when people ask him why he's not vaccinated, it's always, what does he say? He goes, like, I don't have enough information about the vaccine yet.
Yeah, what it'll do for my body.
I just don't understand.
It just screams privilege, like, the fact that he's sort of, like, and he even says this, he said this in this interview, I was never against vaccination. I understand that globally, everyone is trying to put a big effort into handling this virus and seeing, hopefully, an end soon to this virus.
Hello, if you say, you're not helping.
If you say that you understand this global effort and the need to do so, and then actively are making the decision to so firmly stand against getting vaccinated, that in itself is anti-vax. Like, that in itself is, at the very least, like, not showing, like, showing that you don't understand that this is a globally, this is a global effort and that you need to do your part and get vaccinated and help out with that. And, like, he's just, again, it's just privilege, like, just not wanting to do it and being so ignorant of that is, in my view, like, you might think, like, oh, it's just, like, one person, whatever, but, like, first of all, it's about being part of this effort, and in his position with the platform that he has, I feel like it's even more disrespectful, and as a person who, like, with your career, is always traveling around, right?
Yeah, it's just, honestly, at this point, him saying this, he's, like, anti-humanity, not just anti-vax.
Yeah, this was a really disappointing interview. I saw a lot of Djokovic fans on Twitter actually really disappointed in this, because I guess this is the first time that he really came out.
Like, said it clearly. Because before he says, like, he kind of alludes to it in, like, a general sense. But now he just, like, put the words out word for word. And, like, we have a bunch of quotes that are of him admitting this. But, actually, in addition to speaking about his kind of view on vaccination, he also spoke of his short-lived experience in Australia. So they also discussed kind of what was going on from his viewpoint in Australia. And we all recall that one day that he was allowed to train and everyone thought that it meant he would be participating. And I remember Shravi and I saw that and we were going insane. We were so mad.
When he was on Rod Laver Arena, right?
That yeah.
Hitting session.
Yeah. So what he said about that day, quote, I had helicopters flying above every single training session that I had on Rod Laver Arena, cameras all over the place. Also, I felt that energy and those looks from my colleagues and people that were in the tennis facility. That really hurt me a lot. End quote. And honestly, like, not only did he get himself into this, but I have to say that I kind of appreciate the fact that his colleagues were giving him dirty looks.
Yeah, well deserved.
I didn't imagine that would actually happen because, you know, he's Novak Djokovic, you know, you don't really touch him, you just let him do what he does. But the fact that he felt that energy, I have to say I appreciate that from his fellow players.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, he got himself into this mess. I have absolutely zero sympathy for this whole situation, aside from maybe the detention situation. But also, there's people going through that for much longer times and in much worse situations, like we were hearing about with all the refugee crisis and stuff. So, it's really hard to have sympathy for someone with this much privilege who is actively making this decision. Because, like, you know, it's just... And to come out and say these things, it's really disrespectful when a lot of people are trying to do their best to curb the pandemic and your fellow players are taking this very simple step and, you know, going about and making sure that they're participating in these tournaments safely.
Mm-hmm.
I do hope that maybe if the tours had a vaccine mandate, that would maybe, I don't know if that would make things better or worse, but it does seem like that this issue of, like, players not getting vaccinated is really not that widespread. It's really kind of just him and a couple others. And he's said that he's willing to sacrifice whatever. So it is what it is.
It is what it is. Yeah, just, I completely agree with everything that you said. But luckily, we get to move on to some amazing and, you know, queen-like, iconic news past that.
So both just, these next stories are queen-like, iconic news.
So leave all that, like, junk behind. We're moving forward, guys. And we're going to move forward with Venus and Serena Williams' Harper's Bazaar cover. So they were featured in the Harper's Bazaar Legacy issue, and the it was called Venus and Serena Williams on Their Own Terms, as they should.
It was amazing. It was a great interview, I believe, done by a UNC professor. I don't exactly remember, but definitely check it out. But it was an interview with both of the sisters, and the author noted that it was on Zoom, and Venus was, like, in transit somewhere, and Serena had her camera off the whole time, and I just thought that was really funny. But they talk about a wide range of different topics. Obviously, this is surrounding sort of the latest news about them, which is the success of the King Richard movie, so they talked about that a bit, especially Serena, and how it reflects their their family dynamic. And Serena said, and this is exactly what Josefina told me, actually, after she watched the movie and texted me. Serena said, this isn't a movie about tennis. This is a movie about family. And a really interesting parallel she drew is because she said that she's a huge Marvel fan. So Serena's, like, likened King Richard to...
Wait, I love that. I wasn't expecting that.
She likened King Richard to the Iron Man movies. And she said, there are still other stories around it. Referring to the stories of Venus, their other sisters, their mom, and Serena herself that kind of make up that whole superhero saga, aside from just Richard, but that kind of just showing that it's a more of a story about family than just about how they rose through the tennis ranks.
Yeah, and like Shravia said, when I told her that I'd watched the movie, I said, you know, this is a movie that you go to see with your dad. Like, it's about like the family experience, you know, watching it. Because honestly, you don't even have to know tennis. You just have to be able to relate to kind of a family dynamic. And I really appreciated that about the movie. And honestly, that's shown through, especially considering that they got some Oscar nominations. I think everybody appreciated it.
Just a little thing called six Oscar nominations.
You know, nothing big. It's totally casual. Anyway, so they were also asked about their story and then the context of Black American history, especially considering that, you know, February is Black History Month, so it's definitely an important topic now, but even throughout the year. But either way, the quote from the article was, the Williams sisters were archetypes of the kind of deep kinship ties that are central to the Black American experience. Venus is quick to point out the idiosyncratic in the universal. I think that our family is just unique to ourselves, she says. Obviously, we're an African-American family, and it's important for people to see African-American families in that dynamic to have role modeling. Still, she stresses again, our family was super unique. But, you know, here she's kind of admitting that, yeah, they have, like, a special experience considering they're two of the best tennis players ever. But either way, you know, like I said, there's just something that families can relate to. And especially, as she said, African-American families and kind of that dynamic and the fact that their experience and the movie that represented their experience is not only about tennis. It's about them and their experience as African Americans, their experience as a family, just everything. And everything kind of gets tied into the movie with, like, a neat little bow.
Yeah. That section of the article was one of my favorites because it highlights it in, like, I think we often see their story printed in broad strokes as just, like, these Black American idols in history and kind of just, like, the quintessential, like torchbearers for Black American success. But I think Venus really added some nuance to it, kind of saying that, like, yes, it's great that, you know, we're there as those role models, but also every family is unique, including ours. So I thought that was really interesting and a kind of a necessary kind of nuance to the narrative that it's all sort of the same, or just like one sort of can be viewed in one sort of way. Now, towards the end of the piece, they also, the two sisters, spoke about their current outlook on their life and careers, which, as we can see, just looking at their Instagram, extend far beyond tennis. I mean, Venus is a designer, like, with her 11 brand. Like, I was scrolling through her Instagram last night, and some of her outfits are so cute, like, with the 11 brand. Mm-hmm. Serena also is in a lot of, like, financial ventures, and also does her own designing and has a jewelry line and a clothing line and just a lot of good stuff going on. And Serena even said, like, we never plan to just only play tennis. We plan to do more, which I thought was, you know, that's a great lesson to have there, because, you know, playing professional tennis is only going to get you to your, like, early 40s at the latest.
Yeah.
And then Venus said, from such a young age, all we've done is work. So I think for Serena and I to explore that freedom is surreal. We've never been free. So that was a really nice way to kind of end the interview, because I thought it really makes you realize how the impact that these two women have beyond just on the court.
Yeah, yeah. And, of course, it was a great interview. And since it was in a magazine, it was accompanied by some pics, you know, and they were so iconic. I saw them for the first time, I think, on Serena's Instagram, because she had reposted them, and I was blown away. They looked amazing, and just the fact that, like, how they posed in the photos showed their, like, sisterhood, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, I know.
The fact that they're still so close, like, they've come so far, and they've been there, like, every step of the way for each other, I really appreciated that.
Yeah. So definitely give that interview a read if you have it. It's super short. As Josefina said, the pictures are amazing, and it's a nice read to kind of get a new level of insight into their story, kind of at a totally different point in their career, and especially coming off of the movie. So definitely check that out. But now we're going to move on to our last hot headline, which personally is my favorite hot headline, because I think it is so Gen Z, it is so on brand with us, it received some backlash that we're so ready to dismantle, and also because the central figure of this story followed us back on Twitter yesterday, so I'm really excited. So we're going to talk about Morgan Riddle. If you don't know her, she's a social media influencer and Taylor Fritz's girlfriend, and her kind of TikTok account and the quote-unquote tennis influencing that she's been doing on that account, but also some of the sexist backlash it's received, but also a lot of the praise that it's received, which I think has gone beyond the backlash.
Yeah, so she has been, you know, leveraging her platform, particularly on TikTok. I've seen her TikToks. They're amazing. They're kind of about her life, you know, with being with, like, an ATP player, and just the fact that tennis can be cool. And then some of her quotes actually on TikTok are that she's on a personal mission to make tennis cool again, because tennis is, quote, relatively unknown and uncool in America. And honestly, I agree with her, because especially us, like, Gen Zers, when you talk about tennis, for example, in school or really in any environment that's not a tennis facility, it's always like, oh, tennis, that weird sport where they just, like, hit the thing across the net. I don't really understand it, and I'd rather watch football or soccer. It's just, obviously, as we are extreme tennis enthusiasts, it's kind of annoying and disappointing to see that that's the general view that people our age take on tennis. But the fact that somebody here, Morgan Riddle, is kind of supporting, well, obviously she's not supporting us, she's doing her own thing, but, like, the fact that we're kind of in it together and that we're not the only ones who are trying to be like, come on, guys, like, tennis is actually really cool, please look at tennis, it's a really nice sport that you should get into. But yeah, I like the fact that we're not alone in this.
Yeah, and we're gonna sort of get into this in just a bit, but she's also really dismantling the sort of stereotype or norm of what a quote-unquote athlete girlfriend should be like, because her TikToks don't only show sort of how she's traveling with Taylor and like attending these tournaments and supporting him, but also her side and how she involves her career into it. She's an influencer, so she talks about how she's, you know, always doing meetings or writing emails during while watching Taylor's practice sessions, or kind of at the hotel or early in the morning, or kind of combining the two. Like, some of her videos are like day in the life videos of as a tennis girlfriend, or get ready with me videos for tennis matches, which are so fun to watch because her sense of style is awesome. Mm-hmm. And her most recent video is actually, it got over 3 million views, called Tennis Tour 101. So she's really combining her, like, even though it might seem like she's kind of just like doing something to maybe like older audience, she's being shallow or just like kind of using Taylor to sort of get her clout. No, she's leveraging her skills and her already gained platform as a social media influencer and combining her career with, in a way, her personal life with Taylor. And I think that that's amazing. But kind of just to give you a glimpse into what was in her latest video, she's showing like sneak peeks into the grounds of the tennis tournaments, of her watching Taylor's matches, sort of the glitz and glam of tennis. So it's really exciting and perfect branding for the audience that she's going for. And my favorite part is seeing Taylor support her in the comments section because he's like super excited about it.
Yeah, and just the types of videos that she makes on TikTok, that's what we find interesting these days. That's the basis of it. Like, she's doing the right thing.
That's the way to grow tennis's audience with our generation.
Like, I can watch those videos over and over. Like, I could scroll through her account and be like, continue to stay entertained. Meanwhile, of course, like, introducing somebody to tennis by showing them a full-on match, that is pushing it a little far.
Yeah.
So this is the right way to approach it, and I really appreciate what she's doing with her platform. But unfortunately, her most recent TikTok, the Tennis Tour 101 video, received a lot of backlash on social media, especially Twitter. And you know, like we said, it was a Tennis Tour 101 video, and it kind of explained the basics of the tour, how tournaments and rankings work, the upcoming Netflix show, and her mission to make tennis cool again. So, of course, this all seems great to us. I don't understand how it could receive backlash, but I guess it did.
Yeah, a lot of boomers on Twitter were calling her out for being a kind of shallow Instagram influencer and that she's a bad representation of the sport. There was definitely a sense that people were kind of embracing the sexist tropes of the athlete girlfriend as being, again, shallow, ill-informed, not truly appreciating the sport, using it for clout, kind of all of that, which is like so demeaning to her career and her platform. Like, I know like influencing can seem kind of like, huh, what is that? But like, you can see that, like, yes, I agree. Like, there's some influencers who I'm just like, what are you doing? Like this is, like, stupid. But, like, I've, like, looked at Morgan's account, and, like, she's utilizing her platform in such a creative way. Like, using that position as, you know, someone who's so involved in tennis from that position of being an athlete's partner, but also putting in her own skill is something, I mean, she's really kind of exerting her own independence and agency and making that cool and growing her career with that. But a lot of people didn't like that because they thought that this is sort of like, who does she think she is, kind of.
Okay, so basically they're gatekeeping, which is ridiculous because the whole idea is the opposite, to
they're like
spread the platform of tennis.
Influencing a shadow athlete girlfriend should not be flaunting this, and TikTok is stupid.
Meanwhile, we have one of those reels on our Instagram of us pretending to be ATP girlfriends.
Yes, that it's very funny.
It's really good.
The other thing that people took a lot of issue with was Morgan calling tennis quote unquote uncool in America. But I think what those people don't realize is, like, maybe with some slightly older generations it's relatively popular, but like when Josefina and I go to the US Open, the people our age who we see there are generally kind of just there with their parents,
and most of them are the people that we know.
Yeah, that too. So I like, and if you see what like people our age like repost on Instagram, it's a lot of stuff about basketball or football. Sometimes I see soccer, or even sometimes I'll see Formula One.
Hockey.
But I'll never see anyone except Josephina, or maybe like maybe two other people I know, like, post about tennis. I think that's a big misunderstanding, because from our view, like, the insider takes, our generation generally views tennis as uncool. That's just a fact. And Morgan is right. Like, she's in tune with that. The people criticizing her clearly don't know what the situation is.
Yeah. So, like, an example of kind of this backlash was that somebody tweeted at her. Is that the right way of saying it?
Yeah.
Quote, making tennis cool again by having some influencer tout that it's a champagne and strawberry sport probably isn't going to make the sport cool again. And then she actually replied, I think the 2.7 million people who watched that video in the last 24 hours might disagree, but who knows? I'm just a dumb influencer. Queen! Oh my god, queen.
I love that.
But honestly, like, I've scrolled through her Instagram so many times because it's just so nice to look at. And then, you know, like, since I haven't been to Wimbledon, and to see her, like, pictures from Wimbledon and really just, like, honestly romanticizing the arena and kind of just the beautiful grass fields, I really appreciated that. And I think anybody can, even if they're not a tennis fan. And the fact that she's reaching out to people in that way, in kind of an artistic way, I love that.
She's really created a career for herself as a tennis influencer. Like, who knew that could be a thing? But she's making it a thing, and she's kind of a pioneer in that. But yeah, we kind of want to give our take, because we were fangirling so hard when she followed us back on Twitter yesterday. But move over, boomers. Like, this is what effective social media influencing looks like.
We would know. We're the Gen Z tennis fans.
Exactly. Like, we're probably, like, the voices in tennis can, like, represent that she's doing, like, this is the kind of stuff that's going to draw in audiences. And as Josephina was saying, like, kind of, like, taking the example of her Wimbledon videos, but even, like, the recent content she's been doing of Acapulco, like, she's perfectly appealing to her target audience, which is people like us, in a fun, eye-catching way. And, I mean, she really is making tennis look cool.
Mm-hmm. And just, we're supporting her, obviously, in using her platform and skills to promote the sport and, you know, really challenge the stereotypes of athlete girlfriends, because no, she's not just sitting on the sidelines watching. She's doing something. And she's also, like, even though it might be seen less from the on-court stuff, off-court, she's doing a lot for the sport. You know, she's going to be the reason that more people come to the US Open next year, more people tune in to see Wimbledon this year, for example. And it's just, you know, that exposure is amazing, and especially with the audience that she's targeting, you know, Gen Z, the audience that doesn't really know tennis, doesn't really appreciate tennis the way we do, because, you know, we're just, like, unique or whatever. But either way, I just appreciate the fact that she's kind of pushing aside those gatekeeping boomers who think tennis is only for the people that know tennis. No, tennis is for everyone. And I think she's really doing a great job of showcasing that.
Yeah. So if there's any takeaway you have from this, give her a follow, because you won't regret it.
So now we're going to discuss some tennis. Those were some good hot headlines. But yeah, we're going to start off with some of last week's results, because we have plenty of tournaments going on, and also then we're going to get into the tournaments that are actually concluding right now, since it's Sunday. You know, this is the day that all the tournaments kind of just, like, come to a close. But we're gonna start off with the St. Petersburg Ladies Trophy, the WTA 500, where Annette Contivate, the second seed, defeated Maria Sakkari, the first seed, 5-7, 7-6, 7-5, and this was a 2-hour and 57-minute match, so they really went at it.
Yeah, we were hardcore rooting for Annette here. We're big Annette fans. And with this title, this is Annette's 20th consecutive hardcore indoor win with the Ostrava, Moscow, Transylvania Open, and now St. Petersburg titles. So, I mean, she's doing amazing. I also love her Instagram aesthetic. Whenever she, like, posts about her wins or her celebratory tennis cakes, like, it's amazing. And now has reached a career high of world number 6, moving up 3 places. So, very impressive with her, and not an easy final, because Maria has had a pretty solid year with the Australian Open round of 16, and now this WTA 500 final. So, she hasn't really faltered too much yet, but hopefully she can grab a title, because she also has a Felix, ex-Felix similar record in semis and finals. But also, Ostapenko had a very deep run here to the semis, so we're going to talk about what that meant for her going into Dubai this week, but she's also been looking to be an informed player the past couple of weeks.
Yes, so now we have Rotterdam, also a 500, but an ATP 500, and oh my goodness, guys, he did it after 8 losses. He finally did it. Felix Auger-Aliassime, the third seed, defeated Stefanos Tsitsipas, the first seed, 6-4, 6-2 in the final. And honestly, I am surprised that this is the one that he decided to take, since it was against a first seed, because I remember he was going to play a final against Marin Cilic, like, last year or the year before, maybe, and I thought, oh, this is the one. But no, he decided to take the long route, you know, take his time, and he finally achieved it. So this is, in fact, Felix's maiden title, and like I said before then, he was 0-8 in finals, and we've been waiting for this moment for so long.
Yeah, and I mean, it's really full circle for Felix, because he said, and you know, after the match, "It has not been the smoothest road since my first final 3 years ago. It is an amazing day for me to get my first title, and especially here. I played my first ATP main draw here a couple of years ago, so it is right I won my first title here." So that's, you know, we're super happy for him. I think it's a big confidence boost for him now. The pressure has certainly been alleviated, and a big sigh of relief. And he is playing some of his best tennis. I mean, ever since sort of his Wimbledon... Oh, no, not that was Schoppo, not Felix. But I think Felix did pretty well there, nonetheless.
He made the quarters.
But, yeah. So ever since kind of that, his U.S. Open semis, and then kind of his Australian Open run and ATP Cup run, I mean, he's just doing really well and producing some great tennis.
He is. And, we expect a lot from him now, because, you know, he's kind of made that breakthrough. It's kind of like a ceiling he had to kind of crash through in order to really just reach his potential. But we did have another tournament, the Dallas Open, yeehaw, the ATP 250 held in Dallas, Texas. And Riley Opelka, the second seed, defeated Jensen Brooksby, the fourth seed, 7-6, 7-6. And this was Riley's overall third ATP title and second Dallas/New York Open title, since then technically they're the same tournament, but also not. But anyways, shout out to Jensen Brooksby, because this is his second tour final, and he has reached a career high ranking of 45. So he's cracking the top 50 for the first time, which is very exciting. But he was supposed to play Del Rey this week, but I think he pulled out because he had a sinus infection or something. And he said it had been bothering him for like a couple of days. So I'm going to assume that's why he lost the final. Yep.
Okay. Now, it can't be an American 250 tournament without a lot of tiebreakers. So in the semis, Riley Opelka, in fact, played... was it Riley or was it Jensen who played this?
It was John Isner.
No. But who beat John Isner in this?
Oh, semis? Riley.
Oh, right. Okay, so Riley, in the semis, played the longest tour-level singles tiebreak in ATP history at 46 points. since 1990 when, as Josefina said, he defeated John Isner. And, I mean, are we surprised? Like, no. Like, it's a bunch of American big ATP servers, so I'm not shocked at all that there were a lot of tie breaks throughout this entire tournament. But there you go.
Yeah. So, finally, we have the Argentina Open, the ATP 250 held in, OMG, wouldn't you believe it, Argentina. And Casper Ruud, the first seed, defeated Diego Schwartzman, the second seed, 5-7, 6-2, 6-3. And they were two kind of defending champions because Diego won in 2021, but Casper pulled out last year but won in 2020. And that was actually his maiden title. So as of now, Casper is 9-0 at the Argentina Open. And, I mean, he's had an impressive run these past few years. Last year, he took 5 titles. So his clay ATP 250 streak has improved to 18 straight wins with this title. And unfortunately, Casper just pulled out of Rio with an abominable abdominal injury. So hopefully he gets better soon so we can see some more of him.
Yeah. So now as we transition into the action that's kind of wrapping up this week, you might have noticed that we were talking a lot about ATP tournaments, but we've only talked about one WTA tournament yet. And, you know, there was a tweet that at VunchV2K, who is pretty awesome on tennis Twitter if you don't follow him already, where he noted that in the 2022 tennis season so far, there have been 15 ATP Tour events, this is not including the ATP Cup, and just 7 WTA Tour events. Why are the women getting such fewer playing opportunities? And this sort of sparked a whole discussion because this is a two-pronged issue in that it's both sort of a media and, like, exposure issue, but also a pay issue, obviously kind of revolving around playing opportunities. Because now it's harder for WTA players to qualify for tournaments because there are fewer events, which makes it harder to earn money. So you're seeing a lot of these tournament fields so much more stacked because you have so many more players trying to compete for those spots in the main draw. Like Jill Teichman, for example, who's ranked like 35, had to come through qualifying to get into the Dubai main draw. So that kind of goes to show you how, you know, how hard it is for these WTA players to get into these tournaments because there are such few playing opportunities, and this kind of trickles down to like the ITF level as well. So I hope that gets resolved and evens out a bit because that does have an impact.
Yeah, I totally agree because I felt recently, you know, I felt that before the St. Petersburg Ladies Trophy, there was that one week that was all ATP tournaments. And I was kind of searching, like, where is the WTA tennis? I don't see anything. And then I realized that there is just no tennis. And honestly, I was disappointed. And like you said, the fact that that's kind of trickling onto social media and the fact that people are just seeing more ATP tennis because there is more ATP tennis kind of, it's just making that gap between the social media exposure of the WTA and ATP just larger. And it's kind of working against everything that especially we have been working for years. Yeah, because we're experienced in the field. But yeah, we're going to talk about some tournaments that are going on this week, starting with the Dubai Tennis Championships, the WTA 500. So this tournament was stacked, and like we said, it's evident why that would be. But everyone was saying that it looked like the second week of a slam, which of course they're producing great tennis, but at the same time, there's kind of a bittersweet connotation to it. But we had a lot of upsets in this tournament. Sabalenka, Barbie K, Paula Badosa, Iga Swiatek, and Garbiñe Muguruza.
Yeah, but in the final, we had a very resurgent performance from none other than Yelena Ostapenko, who defeated Veronika Kudermetova 6-love, 6-4 in 65 minutes. And this is amazing because, I mean, Josefina and I, once we started, like, Ostapenko's run was crazy. Once we started to see, like, the types of players that she was beating, like, we saw her, like, her 6-1, 6-2 win over Sofia Kenin in the first round.
That made me laugh. We were texting each other. I'm so sorry.
We were texting each other. We were like, kind of ironically, but unironically rooting for her this week because we were like, this is kind of awesome. Because we've brought up her name kind of here and there every other episode just because, you know, her 2017 run is just so funny to reflect on. But she's just a character. So we were really excited to see her kind of finding her groove again and taking her fifth WTA singles title. But this came as no easy feat because her sort of path to the title was very difficult.
Yeah, she beat four Grand Slam champions en route, Sofia Kenin, Iga Swiatek, Petra Kvitova, and Simona Halep. And she came back from a set down versus Swiatek and actually saved a match point versus Petra Kvitova. And obviously, Simona was playing some amazing tennis in this tournament. So that goes to show how well Yelena was playing. But
yeah, coming down from like a set down in all three of those and then kind of taking it in easy form versus Kudermetova in the final, like, impressive stuff.
Yeah. And we talked about in the last episode, I believe, about how kind of Adidas ditched her and she's been wearing different brands, which, I mean, it's not even, like, I wear different brands. You wear different brands. It's not that big a deal.
No, but she was wearing, like, a standard generic Nike kit because, like, she didn't have a sponsorship, so I think she just, like, wore the Nike kit, but it wasn't, like, the seasonal one. It was like a basic skirt and a shirt. So like it was clear like she didn't have a sponsorship from Nike, but she was just like wearing their clothes.
Which is sad. Somebody better pick her up quick because she's doing really well.
Yeah, and I mean, to show that, her ranking is gonna jump because after the St. Petersburg semis and this title in Dubai, she'll be ranked number 13, which is her best ranking in over 3 years and the first time that she's in the top 20 since 2018. And I mean, it's amazing. And I do hope she can keep it going because she's known to sort of kind of have spikes like that. Yeah. But also, Kudermetova and Ostapenko also made it to the doubles final, obviously on opposing teams. But that one, Kudermetova ended up taking with her partner, Elise Mertens.
Mertens.
They both got a trophy at the end of the day.
Yes. And now on to the Rio Open, the ATP 500. They have been set back by a lot of rain delays. I know that I was trying to look at the scores and then I saw a match was canceled and I was like, what? I didn't know that was possible. But anyways, yeah. The final is set and it's going to happen later today, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's going to be Diego Schwartzman, the third seed, versus Carlos Alcaraz, the seventh seed. And they had to play quarters and semis in the same day because of all the rain. So that's pretty crazy. And honestly, that puts a strain on players, not only mentally. Like, imagine. Wow. I can't even imagine, honestly. Imagine if they did that at, like, the U.S. Open. That would be insane. Yeah.
Yeah. So to talk about our finalists, Diego defeated compatriot Francisco Cerundolo in the semis, who we're big fans of. But Diego was actually a finalist last week in Argentina. And Cerundolo has been having a very good past few weeks on this sort of golden swing. He took a challenger title. He made the Argentina Open quarters and the semis here in Rio. And both of those losses were to Diego, but close matches. And then we have Carlos Alcaraz, who's been on fire, and he defeated Matteo Berrettini in the quarters in a very rain-interrupted three-setter. But these two are definitely brewing up a rivalry, and this was Carlos's fourth top 10 win, so great for him there. And then he defeated Fabio Fognini, who somehow made his way into the semis. But with this title, Carlos Alcaraz would get into the top 20.
So he really is on the rise, and it's starting to show.
Yes.
Interesting.
But he's not the next. He's not a Rafael Nadal.
Yeah.
Equivalent.
Just no. I hate those
comparisons.
Me too. And, you know, there's a post, I think, the ATP Tour posted of Carlos Alcaraz. And then the comments, every comment that, like, replied to somebody comparing him to Rafael Nadal and kind of trashing that person, I liked every comment.
Yeah. Because I hate when the locals start commenting on, like, the ATP's tweets or posts when they don't really know anything.
Yeah. But there is some more tennis. However, they are smaller tennis tournaments, so some ATP 250s. There are three of them that have been going on this week.
We're talking about three ATP 250s and one ATP 500 this week compared to just one WTA 500.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
It's honestly annoying because I am sick. We get sick of the ATP real quick
so
around here.
So easily.
Yeah. So, first up, we have the Qatar Open, an ATP 250 event, where Roberto Bautista Agut, the second seed, defeated Nicolas Basilashvili Puke 6-3, 6-4, and this was RBA's 10th title, first since 2019, actually, so good for him. And unfortunately, last year, Basilashvili took the title against RBA in the same final, but thank goodness for revenge, because somebody needs to get this guy off tour since the ATP's not doing anything. But during RBA's trophy ceremony speech, guess who ran onto the court? And he was wearing, what are the things called? Pacifier, right?
Yes.
He was wearing a pacifier. Roberto Jr., RBA's 1-year-old son. And he is so cute. Oh my God. I was seeing the videos on Instagram, and my heart was melting. It reminded me of, like, because Mahout always, his son comes on, and it's so cute.
Yeah. Or also the doubles team of Cabal and Farah.
Like, yeah.
One of their sons also always runs on court, but nice to see Roberto Jr. coming on. And this reminded me of Taylor Fritz calling RBA his dad.
You have really a brother.
Exactly. But, oh my god, imagine Roberto having a playdate with Taylor's son. Oh my god, Taylor Fritz's son is older than Roberto Bautista Agut's son. Oh my god. But either way, they're both adorable. But I think this alone turned me into a Bautista Agut fan, more so than, I was kind of neutral on him, but this
very
whole,
neutral. Like, so this, extremely neutral I was.
This has made me actually really like him. I think he's moving his way up my list. Then we have the Marseille Open, another ATP 250 that literally just finished like an hour ago. I was watching it while eating breakfast, but Andre Rublev defeated Felix Auger-Aliassime 7-5, 7-6. So honestly, I was happy with this result because Rublev is someone who hasn't been having his best season so far, but kind of just like making it through. And this was like a much needed kind of confidence boosting win and title. Also, because he had lost to Felix a couple times before. So this is his first title since Rotterdam last year and his 9th overall. So nice to see him kind of get that groove back, but really nothing to be too shaken up or disappointed about here for Felix.
Yeah, so Felix is, like we said, coming off of that Rotterdam final where he had an 8-match winning streak going into this final, and overall in 2022 he's 15-4 win loss, so he is definitely one of the most informed players of 2022. But also he spoke about now how the pressure is going to kind of be a lot less when he's going to the later stages of tournaments, especially finals, because you know, that one thing won't be on everyone's mind anymore. You know, he got that title, and it's not going to be like, oh, is this the one for Felix? This has to be the one for Felix. Is it going to be this one? No, now he can just, you know, enjoy himself and prove, really, honestly, the fact that he needed a title to prove what an amazing player he was a little annoying because of all that pressure he was facing, because he made 8 finals at, 21 years old? That's phenomenal. And honestly, he did run out of steam a little bit in this match, but either way, a phenomenal start to the season, and honestly nearly perfect. Just awesome tennis from him.
Yes. Okay, this is quite possibly the most boring tournament of the week, but the Delray Beach Open, ATP 250, where we have Riley Opelka once again in a American Southern 250 level tournament final, playing against Cam Norrie, the first seed, wow. I mean,
yeah, so it's just as bland as it gets.
I hope you're as excited about this as I am.
I'm falling asleep as we speak. Yeah. So the semifinals were Riley Opelka defeating John Millman 7-6, 6-7, 7-6. John Millman.
Is that Scorpio?
Yeah, I know, right? But John Millman, he isn't so bland. We'll cut him some slack here.
No, he's like the only one with flavor in this draw.
I mean, the other semifinal was Cameron Norrie defeating Tommy Paul, 6-3, 6-3. Tommy Paul, you know, he's his own thing. He's, yeah. But in the quarters, Cameron Norrie defeated Sebastian Korda, which I'm taking personally, but it's okay because Seppi got him in round one of the Australian Open, which is, like, definitely a more important tournament, a little bit, and... You know, wait, did Subby make the finals of Delray or win Delray?
I was just about to say that. I think he made the finals last year.
Yeah, so obviously I'm a little salty about this, but whatever. Yeah. That was a horrible end to that. Yeah. Anyways, we have some tennis coming up and next week. So let's.
Really, like today slash tomorrow.
Well, yeah.
Starting.
Let's do the jiggy down on that.
Yes, so. On the ATP side, we have the Dubai 500, where Djokovic is going to play for the first time this season. The Acapulco 500, where Daniil Medvedev is headlining the field. And then the Chile 250. And then on the WTA side, we have the Doha Masters 1000, the first Masters 1000 of the year, right, on either side.
Yeah.
And then Guadalajara 250, where we have players like Emma Raducanu and Madison Keys on court, and it's the same purple and gray court that we saw the WTA finals, so that's all looking good.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us, and that is game, set, and match for today.
If you like this episode, please let us know and stay tuned for more. We'll be providing you all the coverage of upcoming tennis and, of course, all the tea on tour.
Email us at holdontoyourracket@gmail.com for any questions and leave a rating on whatever platform you're listening on.
Hold On To Your Racket is available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts.
Follow us on social media at Hold On To Your Racket on Instagram and at HOTYR_tennispod on Twitter. Our next episode will be released next week as the spring hardcourt swing continues.
And remember, my name is Josephina.
And my name is Shravya.
And if you enjoyed this episode, make sure to hold on to your racket until next time.